Asteroid Goals. What is this hour called?
The No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour.
What did I say when I thought I got it?
I have no idea. Asteroid Goals. Asteroid Goals.
Asteroid Goals. Asteroid Goals. It's right for today.
It's right for today.
Oh. You know what, Jake? Can you ever be on my side? Ever? Asteroid Goals. Asteroid Goals.
Asteroid Goals. Asteroid Goals. What do you think got me this job?
What do you think got me? Oh, darn it. Shoot. I'm in.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
I put my mic up and not yours.
Who got you this job, Jane?
I think it was you.
Oh, well, welcome to the No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour.
Whatever we're calling it.
Someone else came up with something different recently that I was like, oh, that's good too. It's also shorter, but I can't remember what it was. But last hour of the week, we are very happy to be marching towards the weekend. Thank you for listening today. Thank you for your text so far. We have a very fun hour of light Friday-type topics. At 1:30, Johnny Watermelon's going to join us to talk about schmelting.
I'm so excited.
I didn't even know what this was.
It's a thing.
I now know that it's a thing. And we're going to learn more about what the thing is, because the story behind it is that now they're going to allow it under the Hone Bridge in Milwaukee?
That is from what I understand from an article on Milwaukee.com.
All right. Expands hours for schmelters.
It's smelting.
Smelting.
But I like schmelting.
I like schmelting, too. It makes it sound Yiddish.
It's more Wisconsin.
Or German.
It's just more Wisconsin.
All right. So we're going to talk about that at 1:30. But to kick off this segment, we haven't done this all week. It has been busy, but we have abandoned the New Yorker etiquette 194 tips and pieces of advice where they say how you should act. And so I thought we'd bring it back today to debate a couple more on whether or not we agree with them. There's one in particular that we're going to end with that is very New York, and I don't think is something that you or I have to, I guess. Well, you told your Jamie Lee Curtis story yesterday.
So, yeah.
So maybe a little bit, but we'll get to that one at the end. But this is where we talk about some of the more interesting pieces or statements. It's not advice. It's they are declaring this is how to act.
This is how
in 2023.
You should behave. Right.
But the first one is don't tell people they look like other people.
And I've heard that all my life.
That to not do that?
No, that I look like someone.
Who do you get?
You look like someone I know.
But they never say, they don't say a celebrity?
No, it's not that kind of comparison. And I just figure I look like a lot of people's second cousins. You look so familiar. Do I, it's like, okay, well, thank you. I don't know.
It's not that you sound familiar because people hear you on the radio for the last 40 years.
Well, and that's where I get busted is when I talk.
Yeah.
But no, why is it bad to say you look like, I don't know, Michelle Pfeiffer?
I think it's, and I shouldn't talk. So I am very lucky in that most of the people I have ever been told that I look like are famous, beautiful actresses.
Oh, well, that's, what a curse for
Yeah,
you.
That's what I mean. So it's like, I've never been on the end of this where I was like, well, that was insulting. And
are people doing that? Are they walking up to people and saying, you remind me of Marty Feldman?
Well, there was a person you and I both know that to me looked and also kind of acted so much like Michael Scott.
From The Office?
From The Office. And it wasn't Steve Carell. It specifically for me was Michael Scott. And I said that to him. And I don't think he took it as a compliment.
Oh, dear.
And so I think in my case, it's like Julia Roberts and stuff like that, where it's like, it's always a compliment because these are women who are professionally beautiful, basically. And so, but on the other side of people who get compared to like character actors, is it a compliment?
I don't.
Or you know, I. And it's just also just kind of like, I don't know. I think it can be unless it's someone who is objectively good looking. I think you can potentially
slide with it.
Yeah, you could just, the other person may not take it as a, you might have think you like connected the dots, but for them, they just think it's annoying. I think that's the piece of advice, that unless you really think that that's going to be a compliment, maybe don't tell them they look like your cousin, because they don't know your cousin.
And your cousin could be a criminal.
And you guess that too. And so I think I agree with this. Not that I've always abided by it, but I feel like this is...
Just make sure it's a flattering comparison. I think that's a pretty easy thing to stick by. But then if you don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think that's fair. So just tell everyone that they look like supermodels.
Or Julia Roberts.
Or Julia Roberts.
Let's just apply Julia all across the board.
All right. So that was number one, where I think we agree. This one's kind of funny. White people should always clearly pronounce 50 Cent. He's not fitty to you.
Wow.
I agree with that.
See, and this will kill you, but when I was working at a different radio station.
Okay.
And
you interviewed 50 Cent?
No. But his name came up and I pronounced it 50.
Okay.
Because I did not know. And my then co-host corrected me and said, no, it's Fitty. And I said,
really?
Yeah. And I said, I'm not saying that.
See, and I think you made the right call.
Fitty isn't a word.
Yeah, it's also 50. That's how he spells his stage name. It's 50 Cent.
Yeah, it's 50.
And so he couldn't say it. It's not spelled phonetically. And so I think unless you are, I think I agree that it sounds awkward if you say Fitty as a stodgy white person.
I don't understand word rules.
But it's also, it goes back to, I think this was one of the ones from last week, which was mispronouncing things. And I had made the point of when people don't pronounce things with an accent. So when you say Ibiza and then someone corrects you and goes, it's Ibiza. You're like, eh. That feels like one of those things to me. It's like, I'm just going to call it. It feels awkward coming out of my mouth saying 50.
Just call him Mr. Scent.
Yes. All right. Next one. I don't know how to best in situations like this. So maybe this is good advice. To gracefully exit a boring conversation, merge with another chatting duo, then sneak away unnoticed into the hubbub. They'll see straight through, I'm going to the bathroom or I'm going to get another drink and I'm going to go make the rounds is a bit cruel.
Well,
What if there's no other chatting couple?
Exactly. And what if they're all the way on the other side of the room? And so you're going to have to try and migrate with this other person over to these people so you can try and blend in and sneak away?
I know. I don't think... I get that I'm going to the bathroom or I'm getting another drink. First of all, I think both of those can be true.
Those are legitimate.
And I do think I'm going to go make the rounds is... Unless you know that person well enough to say... This is a social event. I want to talk to more people than just one person. Because I think that is legitimate. Like, I was at a retirement party, and I was having a great conversation with someone, but there was a ton of people there that I wanted to be able to talk to in the hour and a half that I was there. Mm-hmm. And that exact thing happened where it's like, how do I...
Move around?
How do I get out of this conversation? Not because she's boring, but because I have other people that I need to talk to while I'm here.
Right.
And I think I kind of did the... Someone eventually came up... Start talking to that person and then kind of like shirked away.
Or you could have just said, is that Julia Roberts on the other side of the room? Because she looks just like her.
I'm going to go see how much we look alike.
Wow, that's crazy.
But what do you typically do?
I'm going outside for a smoke.
That's a good one. That works.
I'm a social pariah. Forgive me. I'll be back. But I don't see anything wrong with, I'm going to go get another drink. Can I get you one? Yeah. You know,
but then you got to go back if you do get, they say yes.
Yeah, but then it's like, now I have to go talk to Julia Roberts because I missed my chance before.
All right. So you think, it's not so much that I think this is wrong advice. It's just not always practical.
Yeah.
That if there is no other chatting duo.
You're stuck.
You got to use something else. All right. So this is the one that is very New York.
Okay.
That I don't know. I don't know how often you or I... or any of our listeners are going to have to use this advice. But who knows?
You never happen. You could happen.
Know. Here's a good way to handle yourself when being introduced to a famous person.
Oh.
Your friend. This is my friend, Pete. It's Pete Davidson.
Okay.
You. Oh, of course. So nice to meet you. It's weird to pretend you don't know who they are, and unless you're a true fan, saying you love their work just feels disingenuous. I mean, this is what I say, it's kind of a New York thing, or an LA thing, or whatever, as far as the don't pretend that you don't know who the person is.
But what if you genuinely don't know who the person is?
Well, then
is?
Maybe, yeah. But I think it's if you do.
So don't, yeah, okay, well, sure.
That's
fine.
This is the thing, it's like, being around, this is why celebrities are weird, because everyone's awkward around each other. It's like, it's such a weird thing to be like, how do I deal with this person who is universally known, but I don't know them as a person.
But I feel like I know them.
But they also might be offended if you pretend, I feel like I know them because their love life is everywhere and especially comedians who talk about their lives mm-hmm. all the time on stage. And so it's the interaction of how do we go about this and actually have a conversation, because it's very unbalanced of information of how much one of us knows about the other. And so there you go. Oh, of course. So nice to meet you. I think that's
fine.
That's polite.
Yeah. And you don't gush.
Who's the most famous person you've met?
We didn't always meet in person. We talked to a lot of people, obviously, over the air and over the phone over the years. I got to talk to Vincent Price. I got to talk to Tom Brokaw. I met Bo Derek once.
Ooh.
Yeah, that really made me feel good about myself. She's adorable.
You two, no one said that you two look like each other?
No one has ever said, gosh, you look so much like Bo Derek. You could be twins.
All right. Well, when we come back... Girl Scout cookies. I thought they've been on sale. Apparently, just now.
It's time.
Now it's time. What's your favorite Girl Scout cookie? Let us know. 844-967-2789. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Chocolate on my fingers, icing on my lips, sugar, diabetes.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I'm Kristen Bry. Jane Medair, did you find a Girl Scout cookie song?
It is not a Girl Scout specific cookie song. It is the Oreo cookie blues.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
All right. Do you know that they now have Oreo stuffed Oreos? So that the icing in the middle is Oreo flavored, like cookies and cream flavor.
Okay.
I haven't had them yet, but they sound really good.
I haven't eaten an Oreo cookie in decades.
I had an Oreo cookie last weekend. I also, this is the trash that I'm eating these days, have not had Skittles all week, so.
Well.
I did finish off a bag of Sour Patch Kids, but I also had a craving for Chewy Chips Ahoy.
Fair enough.
Still very good. Very, very good. Highly recommend.
I can make you some killer chocolate chip cookies.
Can you? Do you like baking?
I do like to bake.
Well, we should, first we need to buy Girl Scout cookies, support the Girl Scouts.
Yep.
But then once we've eaten those boxes, I found, this is from Up North News. I found, they found replica.
Pseudo.
Recipes to try to make your own Girl Scout cookies for when you're craving them, but the sale is not happening. So I thought this was happening. I thought it was almost too late.
To order Girl
because
Scout cookies?
Because were you a Girl Scout?
I was.
For how long?
I was a brownie.
I was just a brownie too.
And then I think I did 1 year of regular Girl Scouts, and then I never got any badges.
You couldn't start a fire? I don't even know what the badges were.
I don't even think we had fire.
I think I have my brownie Girl Scout like
outfit or the sash.
The sash.
Nice.
My mom found it, and so I think it's somewhere in our house right now. And there were a fair amount of badges on it, but those feel like participatory badges because it was certainly like 6 to 8. So what could I have really been doing that was really earning anything besides showing up? But yeah, I made it until like third grade. And I was like, yeah.
I'm going to do something else.
Do some plays.
Yep.
And, but I do feel like now the parent involvement, and certainly my mom helped us sell Girl Scout cookies, but the multiple emails across my different jobs of parents saying, if you want to fill out Girl Scout cookies, instead of, the whole point is supposed to be the entrepreneurship of the Girl Scout.
Of sale.
Right? Of them going out and sale, and there's some setting up their card table mm-hmm. and actually being, you know, and having their parents help, but not just having your parent, like, do the sheet, right?
Exactly.
And so, we try to pick and choose because now we're at the age where there's more and more Girl Scouts or girls of our friends who are that age that are Girl Scouts that we're trying to pick the ones who are putting the work in.
Oh.
So you say. But because I started already getting these emails, I was under the impression that we were already like very much into Girl Scout cookie season. But apparently in Wisconsin, you've been able to order online since February 1st.
Okay.
But tomorrow, March 4th, is the first day that you can actually do in-person sales. So maybe that's why I've only been getting work emails versus seeing at Pick and Save or whatever,
right, right.
Seeing the girls set up. And so I'm excited. I'm excited.
What's your favorite Girl Scout cookie?
I really like Samoa's.
Me too.
I like Thin Mints. I mean, I honestly kind of like all of them. There's not one that I'm like, oh, like get away from me.
See that, and I find Thin Mints highly overrated.
I don't think they're the best cookie I've ever had. I think they're good. You don't like them, like you like if you have them, if they were there, would you eat them, or you're kind of like, ah,
no,
like them at all.
I can pass on those, no problem.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So what are the other ones that you like?
The shortbread, you can't go good with it. Mm-hmm. You can't go wrong with a nice buttery shortbread. That always works. But the Samoas, those are yummy.
The Samoas are really good. I like the tagalongs with.
Aren't those the same thing?
No. So the Samoas have coconut.
Yep.
But then the tagalongs are they're fully covered in chocolate, and they have in a wafer, and then like on the top of the wafer is peanut butter.
Ooh.
And you know what I used to do as a kid that's so gross?
Jeez.
I used to just scrape the peanut butter off and then leave the wafer.
You would just leave it around the house?
I think I threw them away, but I don't know. But I wouldn't eat the whole cookie. I just like scrape off the peanut
butter. Yeah, but people do that with Oreos.
That's true. Thanks for making me feel better.
See?
But they have a bunch of new ones that I have not ventured into. So they have raspberry rallies, which sound like they're kind of, it's a thin, crispy cookie infused with raspberry flavor and then dipped in chocolate.
See, now the Girl Scouts are falling victim to the infusion phase. We have to infuse everything.
But then Adventurefuls, have you heard of these?
Mm-mm.
Indulgent brownie-inspired cookies topped with caramel-flavored cream with a hint of sea salt. Those sound kind of good.
That sounds tasty.
And then they just have like a, I didn't know that they now just have a classic like caramel. Oh, it's gluten-free. Caramel chocolate chip gluten-free Girl Scout cookie. Pass.
And how much are they a box?
I think they're 11. Here we go. The countries, they set their own prices. So the countries, 111 Girl Scout councils each set their own prices ranging from $4 to $7 a box.
Hmm.
The Badgerland Council, which spans the central part of the state, including Madison, so I don't know what covers southeast Wisconsin, is selling their cookies for $5 a box. So it's still pretty affordable.
That's not bad.
I was off the, and I, you know, inflation, I guess, hasn't touched the Girl Scout cookies.
They're hanging in there.
All right. Well, let us know what your favorite Girl Scout cookie is. 844-967-2789. Or if you have any smelting stories.
Oh, we want to hear them.
When we come back, Johnny Watermelon will be here to tell us what smelting is, because I literally did not know what this was. You're before this morning.
You're missing out, girl.
And now we're going to have a lesson. All right, this is As Goes Wisconsin. Quick.
You be pushing up daisies because, boy, you definitely sick. But I couldn't quit if I wanted to. Yeah, I don't want to lose.
Lazy yellow moon coming up tonight, shining through the trees. Crickets are singing and lightning bugs are floating on the breeze. Baby, get ready.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and he is Waukesha, W-A-U-K, the Shaw's very own sales manager?
I'm the sales guy, the account executive here. So I help out in a number of ways, but I'm very fortunate to have a sales spot.
Absolutely. Johnny Watermelon, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
It's so funny because I'm just realizing this is the first time Don Brown's been on,
yes.
I think, once. But as many times as I've seen you sit through the window working on sales,
yeah,
it's the first time having you on the show.
We cross each other in the halls a little bit and see each other on the side of this big bay window here. And so, yeah, when you gave me the invite this morning, it was like, hey, do you know anything about smelt fishing? And I went, hell yeah. I did that when I was a kid, and I got a couple of memories here that I think are going to be relevant. And we were just talking a little bit off air about some of the things that I thought Kristen and Jane were very pleasant memories, and some of them, not so much, you know. They kind of suck.
All right,
so here we go.
Just to back this up a little bit. So I had left. I had asked Jane. I was like, "What do you think we should talk about in this segment?" And then I drove to Waukesha, and she goes, "Did you see the thing I said about schmelting?" I was like, "Excuse me, what?" And she goes, "Schmelting." I was like, "I don't. That sounds like an innuendo for sex. What are we talking about?"
No, it's not hot molten steel. That's schmelting, I think, or smelting. But these are fish, and they're smelt.
So okay. They're smelt fish. Are they like the size of ants? They're little.
You know, they're small. Where I went was in out of Algoma in Lake Michigan. So they were probably anywhere from about maybe 3 to a big one would have been about maybe 6-7 inches would have been a big smelt for us. But most of them were on the smaller side. So that. But I did just a little bit of Googling up here before I came into this deal, and I learned that in different parts of the world they're much bigger. But where we are in Lake Michigan. That's about the size of them. So anyway,
so
3 to
why?
6.
So the fish are called smelt.
Yep.
Why is it not just called fishing? Why is it specifically called smelting? Is it a different technique?
There's a little different deal going on there. Okay, so what happens is that you basically have these nets. They're called seines. Okay.
Okay.
And they're probably about maybe 20 feet long at the most. And you have poles on each side of this net. They're about 4 feet high. And the weave on that net is very, very small. You could probably fit a number 2 pencil through it. So the weave on it is pretty tight to catch these smaller fish. So you have 2 burly men or women go out into the water. They literally wade out into Lake Michigan as the waves are coming in. And, you know, it's cold out and dark. And they drop the net into the water and they start pulling it back towards shore. Now, these bait fish, smelt, are in there trying to do their thing to gather protein or get away from other predatory fish. So they're closer to shore, and you literally kind of drag the net up to the shoreline and scoop these fish up.
Okay.
Okay, so when you're successful, you have a pretty big quantity of fish. I mean, we're talking probably several hundred in one scoop. Okay, so there's a lot. When they're really running, when it's called the smelt are running, you can get a lot of fish in one shot. When they're not running
they're
so
running
much,
the smelt.
You go through a lot more brandy and beer, and you got to sit a little closer to the campfire. So it kind of depends on what's going on there. Mother Nature has a big play in it.
And it's very much, Johnny, a specific time of year, right? And it's overnight. It's an overnight
it
kind of thing.
It really is. You know, so there's a specific time that they're called what, you know, they run. So I don't know exactly what that is anymore because I haven't been doing that for quite some time. But you can, I'm sure that you mentioned something about the time
so the
Milwaukee.
So the reason why this was brought up is, Jane, you found this.
I found this on onmilwaukee.com. So the port of Milwaukee announced yesterday it is temporarily expanding public access hours for smelters underneath the Hone Bridge.
Okay.
So effective March 15th through April 15th of this year, the gates under the Hone on Jones Island will stay open for public access throughout the evening into the early morning.
Okay.
However, because of upcoming construction work under the bridge later this year, this will be the last smelting season for the foreseeable future where they can use that spot underneath the Hone Bridge.
Gotcha. Now, with that new intel, I got to give you a little piece of information. I think this is maybe a little bit different. When they're underneath in that bridge, kind of a confined river area, it sounds like to me, they're probably going to use what is called a dip net. Okay.
So a dip net?
Yeah, a dip net.
Okay.
Kind of like a dip net. Let's just go with that. So it's a little bit different than the seine net and that drag net that I was talking about before. Okay. It's not 20 feet long. It's usually those dip nets are probably like 8 feet by 8 feet, and you just drop them down, and they kind of have, you know, gravity just pulls them to the bottom. And then there's a big rope on there, and the guys, once the fish kind of congregate and go on top of the net into that surface water, they pull that net back up, and they capture the fish that way. So that's a dip net. That will be a little bit different than that drag seine net. Okay. So,
and Johnny, there are some very particular traditions associated with smelting, are there not?
Well, thank you for leading into that, Gene, because yes, there is. And like I said, I had some of those memories that were fond and some that were not so fond. So I just wanted to go through kind of a checklist, and I know where you're going with this, so we'll just get that one right out of the way. It is a tradition in Wisconsin, and especially was back in our neighborhood, that the first one that you got, you bit the head off, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, if you were too much of a chicken and you didn't want to do that and you had bigger brothers like I did, they helped you, okay? So they would...
How does one help one bite the head off of a fish?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of methods to that.
Forcing you to do it.
Yeah, that's really like what happens. Yeah. So what they do is they would take the fish and they kind of put it in your mouth like that, and the other big brother or your big brother would take your jaw and kind of snap it shut and help you out a little bit. And of course, they would rub your throat a little bit like a puppy taking a pill, and you would swallow that thing and you'd get all the nice textures. It was just a beautiful thing.
Now,
And if that is just a little bit too gross for you, there's another method there. I mean, you got the option. You could eat one whole alive. You could take it and put it in your mouth and swallow it live. And then you got that glorious feeling of it wiggling down your throat and into your stomach and doing kind of thing. And if you barfed it up, my bigger brothers would help you with two instead of one. And you kept on going until you kept them down. So it was probably just easier just to bite that off.
Okay, so... I just want to clarify this.
Sure.
From what I understand, there is no actual reason for doing this except to torture your siblings.
Well, yeah, I think you're on target there.
It's not good luck or anything
like that? Well, I think it's good luck, and it probably has something to do with the St. Mark's brandy that everybody brought along. So, I mean, if you get in a certain mood and you have a kind of like a ritual.
I'll just swallow it.
Yeah, I'll just do this thing, and then you get a shot of brandy, and you're off to the races.
So how old were you when you were doing this, and they were forcing you to bite the head off?
My first time, I think I was 10.
So
yeah, I was about 10 years old.
So, but you were saying before burly, so like...
Well, my brothers were much bigger than me.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
I mean, they were strapping young teenagers. So my dad had this ritual of like taking the kids out when they were old enough to go down to the beach in Algoma, because it was a big event. It would be dark, and you would have a little bit of camaraderie with the older brothers and my dad, and you would light this fire, and you'd have that case of beer there and, a bottle of brandy, as I recall, okay? And it was kind of an event. It was like a rite of passage, okay? So that I remember those things being some fond memories, like, you know, I got to hang out with the big boys.
Yeah.
Okay? So it was kind of cool. But there's other parts that weren't so cool, okay? And one of them is literally taking your turn and dragging that net back up to shore. So you'd have one of your bigger brothers behind you, and you'd be in front, you'd be hanging onto that pole. Now, you got to imagine Lake Michigan's kind of it's pretty wavy,
yeah.
and it's colder than you know what. And you would try to pull that net up to the shoreline with those fish in it. It's heavy. Okay. It was a lot of work, and you got that big strapping teenager behind you to kind of help out. But if you tipped and you went in, you got cold, man. It was cold. In Lake Michigan, I don't care what time of year it is, it never gets above 40. or whatever the temp is, but it was very, very cold. And that's why that fire was there. In case you took a digger, you didn't pack up and go home. You stayed there and you pulled your pants off, you dried off, and you got as comfortable as you could, and you're there for the event. So you tried to make sure that you didn't have little accidents like that.
We are talking about smelting in Wisconsin, and our expert is our very own salesman for WAUK, Johnny Watermelon, is here. So now that you have your bucket of smelt,
sure,
and you swallowed the first one whole or whatever it is that you want to do with it, now what do you do with them?
Well, we put them in 5-gallon buckets, okay, and there's always a lot of them, and we ended up in the garage, and Mom would be in the kitchen getting the hot oil going and the batter and that sort of thing. But me and Dad and the rest of the little kids would be in there with toothbrushes and scissors. So you'd cut the head off and then make a scissors cut, you know, from the head down to, you know, the butthole there. And you'd take the toothbrush and scrub that stuff out, rinse them out, and put them in what was called kind of the clean bucket, okay? And that's basically it, how you clean a smelt. And that went on for hours and hours, so it wasn't all that enjoyable, but it was a process. And then you'd bring that bucket into Mom, and she would put them in the batter and deep fry them while she's sitting there with her Braumeister beer and her Winston 100 and cooking up a batch of fish, if you get the picture.
That is quite the picture. I see it very, very clearly.
Clearly, yes.
So, all right, so because before you said the bait fish, so I was thinking that this was part of to catch the fish to then use as bait for fishing, but that's not what you meant.
Oh, no.
This is fish to eat.
Yeah, they're fish to eat.
Okay. What do they taste like?
You know, memory serves me, and you could still buy them in restaurants that have decent fish fries around, but I would say their texture is a little bit soft, and they're a little bit oily, okay? But they're not bad. I mean, they're very palatable. You know, it's not a bad thing. It was actually kind of an enjoyable event. You know, it tasted okay.
Do you have to eat them all up at once though, Johnny? I mean, you can't keep them in a bucket for the week.
No,
right?
That's a great question, Gene. As memory serves me here, I remember we ate just a pile of them because we had 9 kids in that household. But you know, you could freeze them. You'd put them in like Ziploc bags, or we used to put them in milk containers, ice cream containers, I'm sorry, and put them in water and then freeze them. So you could use them, you know, a few weeks later, that sort of thing.
And so was it I'm trying to think about how you specifically said there was, since they're smaller fish, they were closer to the shore, you'd wait out, you'd pull them back in. So when any of us are swimming in Lake Michigan, are this the fish that we're just like swimming around with? Or is there a specific season, like a high season, like after their mating season or whatever, when there's more of them and that's what brings the event of when we do this?
That's a great question. Okay. So one thing I just caught there is like when you're swimming or when we're swimming in Lake Michigan, you got to be tougher than I am because I don't go swimming in Lake Michigan.
To be fair, I have not gone. No, I've gone like
I might wade in it.
The 2 times I've gone in Lake Michigan since moving back to Wisconsin, I was on a boat in Chicago. So I have not gone to like Bradford or anything like that, if I'm being totally honest. But
the water's cold.
The water is cold. The Pacific's always been cold too. You got to go to the East Coast to get warm, big water.
Florida, Southern.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anyways.
So, you know, to answer your question as best I can, I would say maybe. I know that's kind of a lukewarm answer, but it maybe. I just don't know enough about the species to give you a qualified yes or no on that. It could happen that you've got those kind of fish swimming around in that environment. It's probably more stuff like sharks that you got to worry about, Kristen.
Yeah, you're not going to be attacked by a swarm of schmelt.
Yes, no, yeah.
No, they're not going to take you away.
I learned so much. I had literally woke up this morning, couldn't have told you one thing about smelting, and now I feel like I know so much more.
Well, it's very interesting when you threw that out there this morning. I thought to myself, geez, I didn't even know people were still doing that. You know, it was a big deal back in the day.
The tradition.
It really was, and a lot of families, you know, back in the hood, would do that, and it was kind of a big deal, you know. So it was just fun to get the invite, and I'm really glad you invited me on your show.
Yeah, this was so fun. And so, do you still do any kind of fishing? Or?
Oh yeah, I'm a big trout fisher. Yeah, right. I love to trout fish. Take my grandkids fishing all the time. They're always heckling me about doing that kind of thing. Do a little bit of ice fishing, not much, but mostly it's trout fishing and pan fishing with the kids.
That sounds so fun.
Yeah.
Well, Johnny Watermelon, thank you for joining us today. What other topics that you can come weigh in on as far as Wisconsin traditions?
Well, you know, there's probably some things more of the outdoorsy stuff. I like doing that, you know, bow hunting. I'm not anything like Joel Clayfish, but, you know, I do have my little hobbies that I like to take care of, and that's one of them. So.
All right. Okay. Well, Johnny Watermelon, thank you for joining us. We'll come back in a minute to end the show. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madinair, and we are almost to the weekend.
We have to share a couple texts.
All right.
And you can always get in touch with us. Either call or text at 844-967-2789. We were talking about Girl Scout cookies earlier in the hour, and a texter from the 262 says, Kristen will get to try all the new flavors because I ordered them all. And stay away from my caramel delights. This is from your husband. and so apparently you know where the boundaries are now. The boundaries.
Which one does he not want me to touch?
The caramel delights, which I think is also the Samoa. They're similar.
The caramel delights.
Caramel delights. Anyway, it sounds like you have a wide variety to choose from.
Well, that's exciting. I don't believe him that he bought. There's a lot of different ones. There's 12 or 13 different cookies now. I don't think he bought that many boxes.
Well, but I wonder, too, if all of them are everywhere.
It is. It's Caramel Delight Samoas.
Okay.
That's
so
the
it's
full
the same
name.
Thing. Okay.
He better have gotten
more than one box. Or you can talk to Fancy Brian.
That's true. Fancy Brian's also
his daughter.
Daughter Darby is selling them so we can get some replacements.
And then we're just talking to our colleague here at WAUK, Johnny Watermelon, texter from about smelting. And a texter from the 920 says, you have to have that watermelon guy on more. I really enjoyed listening to his smelt stories. He has a great way of painting a picture in your mind.
He was really good.
He was great.
We should give that guy a show or something.
That would be great.
He says he's in. We can hear him through the glass.
We are fortunate to have such great colleagues. We really
are. We are. And so I don't, you know, what we need to do is a better job of like what Luke and those guys have coming up on their show. Because I always know they're after us. Chad's after us on WXCO. Luke and Brian. Almost always Luke. Sometimes Brian.
But Brian's got a lot of things.
Luke's got a great Rolodex of people who fill in that he shares the mic with. But I feel like I need to do a better job of asking them, what's coming up on your show today? Because you know who's really good at that? Todd Albo's really good at that.
Yeah.
As far as knowing... Promoting the shows for the rest of the day, if he knows if they have guests coming on. But all I can say is, I mean, it is always fun as far as
Dueling
what they
Tangents
talk about.
Are great.
Yeah, Dueling Tangents is really good.
Yep.
And so, but yeah, no, we
and
have
Chad Holmes too.
At Chad Holmes, we got a good crew over here as far as civic media and the growing empire that we have over here, which is pretty exciting. So, Jane, what are you doing this weekend?
I have so much catching up to do.
On?
I would really like to get our taxes done.
Oh.
I don't see that happening. I have everything collected in my pile where it will sit. I would like to give my tax guy a break this year and get him in before like the 25th of March. So, but I hate dusting more than just about anything in the entire world.
Do you hate dusting more than taxes?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Taxes are, you can't write anything off anymore, so it really doesn't take that long to do your taxes. There used to be write-offs that would complicate things a little bit more, and Paul Ryan's big postcard, file your taxes on a postcard plan, which didn't actually happen, kind of took away all those deductions. But anyway, dusting is just one of those futile things in life that you do it and you do it well, and 2 weeks later, you got to do it again. It just seems pointless.
It's interesting to me that they have not come up with something like, with all the technology that we have, like we're very close to a self-driving car. Like we have, you know, so many more advancements in, we have computers that fit in our pocket, right? Like, and there's not been something, I mean, do air purifiers help at all with how much dust is in the air that settles on your tchotchkes?
Maybe a little, but there's so many things involved in that. And we're using, you know, the furnaces are running now. And let's not forget a lot of these, disgusting as it is true that some of these particles that are floating around in the air are your skin, are dead
skin cells.
I know.
Isn't that gross to think about?
But it's true.
I know.
And so, yes. So I will be dusting. Yay. And it's a laundry weekend and I need to do a big grocery shop. So we'll do that. And it's supposed to be pretty nice out tomorrow. I should get out and start cleaning up the garden.
You and John Russell.
Yeah.
Gardening away
your
anger.
Yeah, exactly. Gardening away the pain. What about you?
Well, tomorrow is Mr. Michael Sampson's biggest event of the year.
Uh-oh.
The Shamrock Shuffle is back.
Oh, this is a huge thing.
It is I think it's around 10,000 people.
That blows my mind.
And so people who live or have ever lived in Milwaukee in the last 14 years may be familiar with the day 2 weeks before St. Patrick's Day where the Water Street, 3rd Street, Brady Street, and Walker's Point are flooded with thousands of drunk a-holes wearing the same shirt.
Is that required? Do you have to wear the same shirt?
Yeah, I think it's required. So basically, when you sign up for the shuffle, you pick a street that you're going to be on, and you get a lanyard and a t-shirt. And the lanyard, I think, and the t-shirt get you the drink specials at all the participating bars.
Okay.
And so, but it's fun because he always has a theme. I don't even know what this year's theme was, but one year it was like, whatever kind of the zeitgeist popular thing is that year. So one year it was Marvel themed. And that was like we have a very, very talented friend, Kelsey Lawson, who is an unbelievable graphic designer. She's done all of the graphic design for As Goes Wisconsin.
Oh, good. So we're going to get her for our swag when we finally get some.
So she always comes up with a t-shirt every year. And then there's like a space on the back to write your nickname or whatever your friends want to write.
Cute.
And so it's very interactive.
That's
but
cute.
That is tomorrow. And so that is a big, I was not able to help with handout this year during the week. So I'm on the shift for the 9 to 10 handout, t-shirt handout for people who are coming in from out of town. Cause
wow.
A lot of people come from Chicago and Madison and people who don't live in Milwaukee. And it is, it's his teenager. This is the 14th year.
That's just crazy.
And so it's funny introducing when people are like, oh, what does your husband do? And I say this and it's like, the reactions are very polarizing. It's either people who are like, oh, I love the Shamrock Shuffle, or like, that's my, I think Maggie Dawn.
Oh,
she met my
nightmare, her worst nightmare.
She was like, I literally leave town on the weekend of the Shamrock Shuffle because I cannot deal with this.
If you live down there, it's got to be challenging.
It's a lot of people. All right. Well, so yes, yeah, so we'll be having a very good time tomorrow drinking green beer and in green t-shirts. And so I will be recovered by Monday, though, I promise.
I know you will.
All right. Well, we're handing it off to Luke and Brian, Dueling Tangents, The Chad Holmes Show. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Come back on Monday at 11 when it will be As Goes Wisconsin all over again.